Friends, we are caught between the horns of a dilemma. There's both too much noise and too much silence. So I want to talk first about the noise. So the truth is, we are drowning, right? We're drowning in media inputs, information, and stimulation. Every day, I send out maybe two or three tweets, and I receive hundreds back. My inbox gets stuffed with at least 50 emails daily. My Facebook news feed updates about every 15 minutes automatically with 5 or 10 new posts. People send me text messages about baptism, about communion, about worship, about parking arrangement, and everybody wants an answer now. Last night, my kids in New York City sent me 25 messages and pictures on WhatsApp because they went out to dinner and I had to see the food and I had to see the kids and I had to... My phone is ringing, my computer lights up with Google notifications about the news and podcast reminders and software updates, and sometimes it seems like all 2,000 people in my various address books are trying to get hold of me at the same time. They're all crying for my attention and focus, but I'm losing focus. I am distracted. I am anxious because I cannot respond in the way I'd really like to. And I don't seem to be able to turn it off either. It's like the ancient Greek myth of Odysseus. If you took ancient literature, you'll remember that Odysseus has fought in the Trojan War and he's on his way home and he has to sail by the island of the Sirens. These are the creatures who sing so beautifully that sailors who hear the sirens cannot help but crash their boats on the shore because they want to get closer to those beautiful voices. And when the ship crashes on shore, unfortunately for the sailors, the sirens eat them. Fortunately, the goddess Circe has warned Odysseus about the sirens. But Odysseus, who is a hero after all, he wants to hear them. So he comes up with a plan. He gets beeswax, and he makes the sailors stick it in their ears so that they can't hear the sirens. And then he has the sailors tie him, Odysseus, to the mast with unbreakable ropes. The idea is that they'll be able to sail by the island of the sirens, and Odysseus will be able to listen to his heart's content, but he will not be able to escape and thereby be eaten. Of course, that's where we get the phrase siren song from. And siren songs are impossible to ignore. They call to every fiber of our being. Odysseus, because he's tied to the mast, manages to get past the island. But we're not always so lucky. We live in this siren song society, along with everything else that we have to do. You know, we have to eat. We have to get stuck in traffic. We have to get the kids to hockey. We have to work overtime, and we have to practice at night. And besides all that stuff we have to do, our media from TV to computer gaming, from radio to iTunes, from email to text and Facebook and WhatsApp and Twitter and Instagram, it all demands of us all our focus. It demands our heart. And it is so very, very hard to say no. But that's only one side of the story, isn't it? One side of the dilemma. There's another side. I started this message by saying that as a society, we're caught between the horns of a dilemma. There's both too much noise And in a strange way, there's too much silence. You see, in spite of our perfect connectivity and sensory overload, we are also all at risk of living lonely lives, perhaps especially as we age, as spouses and close friends die, as children grow and have their own lives and move to the other side of the city or the continent. Many older Canadians are finding themselves painfully alone. According to Statistics Canada, there are 1.4 million elderly Canadians who report feeling lonely every day. But it isn't just older folks. Loneliness is everyone's crisis. Loneliness is on the rise in the age of connectivity, was the title of a recent CBC radio show on The Current. This show's participants argued that much of our electronic connectivity distracts us from and cuts us off from the intense kind of human skin-to-skin and face-to-face interaction we really need in order not to be lonely. In other words, as much as we'd like to think that all these connections are a substitute for loneliness, they're not. They actually make us lonely. Last month's United Church Observer had an article that said, "Social isolation is probably the greatest environmental hazard of city living. Worse than noise pollution or even crowding." Study after study delivers similar grim prognosis. Loneliness is as harmful to your health as smoking 15 cigarettes a day. Having no friends increases the risk of premature death by 30%. Social isolation can be twice as deadly as obesity, a bigger killer than diabetes, and affect more of us than dementia. Worst told, according to this article, 6 million Canadians, that's one in five Canadians, reports loneliness as a significant reality in his or her life. So there is the conundrum. As a society, we're caught between the horns of this dilemma. There's too much noise. And for too many of us, there's too much silence. So I want to say something briefly about each of these, but in reverse order. First, the silence of loneliness. Today we celebrated a baptism. What happened is this. Jack joined the church. He became a member. Baptism is our rite of membership. And that means that Jack has become one of us. He's a member of this community. Now, let's be honest. I know that there are a lot of what-ifs and maybes with respect to Jack's membership in this community. I mean, what if he leaves? What if community isn't really the thing he's looking for when Jack is 20 or 30 years old? Well, then that's how it's going to be. Jack might not be here. If Jack isn't here, we're going to bless him anyway. It's one of the things the church does that a lot of people don't see or realize. But what Jack doesn't know yet, and we do know, is that church membership is also forever. Jack is always going to be welcome here. And when he comes, we will sit together here in the sanctuary, and the coffee will be on, and discussion groups during the week will be talking about interesting books and movies, like the one we're going to see tonight at 7:30 with popcorn. And there will be social justice and refugee committees when Jack comes. They'll be meeting to plan on strategy. There will be after-church fellowship meals like last week's and the ones that we're having again after the service next week. I mean, when Jack comes back, what Jack is going to find is community. And when members of this church say they need a visit, or when they have a political issue that they want to discuss, or they need some help, because we're community, we're here, and we will talk and meet and share and figure it out. I noticed last Sunday that several of you made a real point out of greeting first-time visitors. You sat down to eat a burger with a homeless man who dropped by out of the blue. Some of you picked up and drove home people who might otherwise have been housebound on Sunday. We're a community that tries. Okay, we're not perfect at this, I admit it. But we try to make Lawrence Park Community Church an antidote to the loneliness that's typical of our cityscape. That's why I love the song, "In Your House I Yearn to Live." We think that's just about God, but it's about each other too. We need each other. But what about all that noise that I talked about earlier? Finishing with what I started with? Well, you know, actually the church has an antidote for noise too. Though, to be honest, we pay it less attention, and I'm willing to admit that up front, it's something that we could all of us probably work at and become better at, and something we should study together, but I'm just going to suggest it and throw it out there for now. The church's antidote to all that media noise is called the spiritual discipline of solitude. Which is ironic because it's the opposite of community. But it's a dilemma. Many faiths recognize that sometimes what the soul is most needful of is solitude. Not the absence of community, but a carefully considered vacation from community so that we can meet not others, but our true selves. Jesus, in our text today, sought solitude as a way to prepare himself for public ministry. You know, he went into the wilderness, the desert. He went there to be alone, to be with wild animals and angels, whatever that means exactly. But what's interesting is that after this first 40 days and nights, Jesus did it over and over and over again. Luke says Jesus often withdrew to lonely places and prayed. Jesus sought solitude after he did those miracles, says Mark. In times of grief, says Matthew, Jesus sought solitude, and whenever the crowds pressed on him, Jesus sought solitude, say all the Gospels. Jesus inoculated himself from the pressures of fame and the pressure of impending violence against his own self. He inoculated himself, in part, by solitude. Ever since Jesus' example, the church has experimented with different forms of solitude as they tried to be like Jesus. Early in the church's history, holy men and women devoted themselves to living their whole lives in the desert, which I think was overdoing it. But it's interesting that what they wrote and how they described their experience is still some of the most treasured devotional literature that the church has. Later, after the fall of the Roman Empire, monks and nuns kept rules of silence to focus on what was most needful. And then later in the Middle Age, especially, mystics meditated to sort through what was true and what was not true and who was there divinely and who was not there divinely. And all of them sought solitude as the place where they might hear that still, quiet voice of God as a break from all the noise. I need solitude. Like the oarsmen in the Odysseus story who put beeswax in their ears briefly to block the siren song and row by the island. I need solitude, profound quiet as something I choose briefly to do the work I need to do. You know that I receive 3 weeks of study break each year besides my vacation, and I use a good part of that study leave in order to write my book and to read good books. But the best part of my study leaves are actually the solitude. I bask in it on some cottage porch in the middle of nowhere after the sun goes down, when my computer has been stored for the night and iTunes isn't playing anymore and there is no internet, when there's no traffic to be heard on the country road at the end of the driveway, then I reflect. I examine myself. I ask myself if I am true, if I am who I want to be. I stay long enough so that I can't avoid the questions. I listen. I'm not sure for what, but sometimes I think I hear it. In the morning, afterwards, at the kitchen sink, I look outside and see the garden, and then I remember what Max Picard, a philosopher, once said. He said, outside the forest, the flowers are like silence that has thawed and glistens in the sunlight. Like silence that has thawed and glistens in the sunlight. I need that silence. Some daily, sometimes a week at a time, I need it to deal with the noise. If you need it, if you need this sort of silence, then, well, you know, this sermon is not a how-to manual. If you need it, then pick up one of the many books on centering prayer or on meditation or mindfulness that are available on Amazon or in any bookstore. All of them say pretty much the same sort of things when it comes to how to and when and why. Ask me if you want a recommendation. Or ask Rhiannon. Is she here? Yeah. Who went on a silent retreat last month for a week and who has spoken so much and so often about it that some of us want a silent retreat too, just to get her quiet. Or attend our Monday meditation class with Marilyn Bacon, a group of men and women who meet together to think about, talk about, but also to practice solitude, meditation, and quiet. If you want to learn more, do any of these things. But as with Jesus and so with me, and so it could be for any of us, choosing solitude is choosing self-examination and dreaming so that we can re-enter and contribute and enjoy community from a place of strength. Friends, we are all caught in the horns of this dilemma. There's too much noise and too much loneliness. So here in this church, I invite you to accept the gift of community, because that's an antidote to loneliness. And I invite you to explore the gift of solitude, because that's an antidote to the noise. Here in this church, where you're always welcome. Amen.